Hello, my spooky friends.
And welcome in to I'd Survive. This is the first episode that we're recording since like announcing our situation, the podcast. And it's been a fun week.
It's been crazy hectic, but in the best way.
Yeah, we also like met each other for the first time in real life. We hung out in real life in Boston.
Yep.
That was so much fun. It's just like, I feel like it's something you got to do. If you're going to have a podcast with somebody, you got to like devote time to really hanging out and getting to know each other on a, like a really deep level. I will get to know anyone. I'll get to know anyone on a deep level. That's just what I do. But I needed that moment with you and I'm so happy we got it.
We really did. We sat down for lunch for like 3.5 hours and just like the topics we discussed, everything. We really just went down every avenue and now we know each other on a whole new level. So
yeah,
that's going to translate into this podcast.
Boston was really fun. Getting to announce the podcast was just really fun because it's been our little secret for a while.
Absolutely. Like we've been so mysterious and weird about things and just like having to watch people talk about it and like whatever and not being able to really say anything has been so hard. But now finally we can actually talk about it. It's been really exciting.
Yeah, it's been like, it's been fun to be extra about the promo.
Oh, hell yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, okay, now I just really want to talk about it. Like, you guys need to know what's been going on.
Absolutely.
So since we've been so busy, neither of us have really gotten into any new horror this past week.
Yeah, for real. It's been a crazy, crazy time getting ready for this launch and everything. So that's where my attention's been.
Crazy. Yeah, me too. I still just really want to see the movie Companion. That's where I'm stuck.
And I want to see the monkey. Like, let's just keep going back and forth on this every week.
Exactly. That's how it feels like at this point. Honestly, it feels like next week I'm going to be sitting here being like, it's been a crazy week. I still want to see this.
Every single week is the same thing.
But for today's episode, I'm going to be covering The Fourth Kind, which is a film from 2009. It feels weird calling it a film. This is a movie. It's one of those movies that's a movie. It's not a film.
Oh, you know interesting. What I mean? I've never thought of it that way, but I kind of get what you mean.
You get the vibe? Like a film is like really taken care of. Okay, I can't just start this.
Starting off being like, it's kind of garbage, actually.
Like, honestly, let's make sure I say I could never put anything together to this extent. It's a movie I could never make. But it's definitely probably lower scoring on Rotten Tomatoes. I'll put it that way.
Okay, I got you.
But this is one of the three movies that scarred me when it comes to horror.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we talked about how Scream scarred me. That's just because I was little.
Mm-hmm.
And then we talked about how Psycho scarred me just because I had a fruit cellar in my basement. And I was like, I can't deal with this.
You're like, no. He's down there.
Yeah. And then this one scarred me because I was 12 years old. And I thought that this was a documentary.
Oh, no.
Yes. I got Blair Witched. I thought it was real.
Oh, gosh.
So I have to ask you who are listening and you, Caitlin, to like put yourself in the shoes of a 12-year-old who thinks this is real shit.
I can definitely do that because like I feel like even though Paranormal Activity came out not like that long ago, realistically, like I remember seeing the trailers for that and thinking it was real. So I can put myself in that headspace.
Yes. I think I had a similar, that's interesting because I think I had a similar experience with Paranormal Activity. It came out around the same time as this.
Was it? Okay.
Definitely middle school era.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking it was real and being really freaked out by it.
Right.
But for some reason, it didn't hold on to me the way that this did.
Okay.
Which you'll understand why. You'll get there.
I'm ready.
So this is a sci-fi horror thriller because we are going to be dealing with aliens today.
I kind of figured based on the title.
Mm-hmm. What are your feelings? Actually, what are your feelings on aliens? Do you believe in aliens? And what are your feelings on aliens in horror?
Okay. So first of all, absolutely, I believe in aliens. Not same. As like little green dudes or anything, but there's got to be life out there somewhere. Like, there's got to be another civilization. We as humans think we're just all that and think that, like, we're the end-all, be-all of, you know, existence. And it's like, yep. No, there's got to be another one out there somewhere. I believe that. That's not crazy to me.
I'm the same exact mindset.
Exactly. So, yeah. And then in terms of aliens and horror, like, I still have not seen the movie Alien, which I know is criminal, and I'm aware of that. And I'm trying to think if I've really watched any alien horror films. I don't feel like I have. Yeah.
Do you know what? I haven't delved that deep into the genre either.
Yeah.
I know when we watched this movie, I didn't even know. I didn't, as a 12-year-old, I was like, didn't know what I was getting into. And then I've only seen Alien and its sequel, Aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've seen The Thing. Honestly, it's never been something that I've been super drawn to as a subgenre. It just snuck up on me this time.
Gotcha. Okay, okay.
So it is set up as a pseudo-documentary. So it's documentary style, but obviously it is fiction.
Heck yeah.
Obviously, I wasn't aware. It's fine. I don't know when I became aware, but...
For a long time, you're just like, remember that crazy doc? Yeah, that was wild.
Yeah, I'm like, wow, I'm so happy that didn't happen to me yet.
Not yet, baby.
Okay, I have to defend 12-year-old me because I do think that this movie did the documentary style really, really well to like convince you that this is real. Like, it says that all the footage shown that was filmed with actors are reenactments of the real, exactly, of the real original documentary footage that was found.
Okay, okay.
And then for the promotion of the movie, Universal created a website with fake news stories from real Alaskan newspapers.
Oh.
Because the movie takes place in Alaska. And those newspapers like ended up suing and settling with Universal over
it. Yo, they didn't ask for permission?
Nope, they just went for it.
That's crazy. Come on, man.
Yeah. They ended up having to take them down, like the fake news stories down.
Jeez.
Okay, this is Alatund Osunsanmi. I'm going to say it different every time, I swear.
You know what? Been there, done that.
Alatund Osunsanmi's directorial debut. He's still working today and is involved in a lot of Star Trek projects, which I've never watched Star Trek, but you know, a lot of people love it.
Yeah, me neither.
Mila Jovovich is our leading actress for this film. I don't think I really would recognize her from anything else, but she's like a big sci-fi and action girly to the point where VH1 dubbed her reigning queen of kick butt in 2006.
Oh, okay, so, cool.
Got Mila.
Not mad about that, yeah.
But yeah, there's not much else to say other than, like I said, I encourage you to please pretend that this story is real when I'm telling it.
Okay, I'm ready.
So here we go. The fourth kind.
Let's do it.
So it starts with our main actress, Mila Jovovich. She comes walking out of a green screen forest right up to the camera, and she says, and I wrote down her whole monologue, and I'm just going to give it to you.
Okay.
I'm actress Mila Jovovich, and I will be portraying Dr. Abigail Tyler in The Fourth Kind. This film is a dramatization of events that occurred October 1st through the 9th of 2000 in the northern Alaskan town of Nome. To better explain the events of the story, the director has included actual archived footage throughout the film. This footage was acquired from Nome psychologist Dr. Abigail Tyler, who has personally documented over 65 hours of video and audio materials during the time of the incidents. To better protect their privacy, we've changed the names and professions of many of the people involved. Every dramatized scene in this movie is supported by either archived audio, video, or as it was related by Dr. Tyler during extensive interviews with the director. In the end, what you believe is yours to decide. Please be advised that some of what you're about to see is extremely disturbing.
Oh, hell yes. That is one heck of a setup because I'm just like, I'm sat now. I'm ready. And especially, okay, yeah, you're a 12-year-old girl. You see that, you go, oh, okay. The actress said it. So therefore, yeah, this is like, a real thing.
They wouldn't lie to me.
No, why would they do that? It's a movie. They're not allowed to lie to me.
And these interviews that she's talking about with the director, they are also a part of the movie.
Okay, I like this.
We have one actress who is playing the real Abby Tyler, and we have an actress who's playing the fake dramatized.
Oh my god, they went deep with this.
Yes. We cut to a talking head of Dr. Abby Tyler, who is being interviewed by our director.
Okay.
And Abby looks rough. Like, she looks like she's been through some shit. And we see text pop up informing us that it was recorded September 3rd, 2002 at Chapman University in California. We're just starting out the interview process and he asks her where she would like to begin. And she says, "I guess after what happened with Will, my husband, I went to my friend who's also a psychologist because I was having trouble dealing with how it happened and who did it." Okay, so we're like, what happened to your husband?
Yeah.
Who did what?
You're opening up these doors for questions and
Yes, what's going on? So we then cut to what is labeled as actual audio recorded on October 1st, 2000 at Campos Care in Anchorage, Alaska.
Okay.
Campos Care is the name of Dr. Abel Campos's facility. Dr. Campos is the psychologist that Abby went to see after experiencing some sort of extreme trauma, and he specializes specifically in hypnotherapy. And the audio we are hearing is from one of those sessions.
Okay.
Abby is telling Dr. Campos that she, quote, has to do this, has to remember his face in order to heal.
Ooh. Yes. Okay.
She wants to do everything she can for her two children, and she says, you know, since that night, Ashley still can't see, and I don't think she's going to get her sight back if she doesn't accept what happened.
Wait, what? She can't see. Okay.
So much is, like, just thrown at you, and you're like, what's going on here?
It's all vague, yeah.
Yeah, so her daughter was, like, not blind. Something happened to her husband, her daughter's father, and now she is blind.
But like, if she wants to see again, she has to accept it.
Yeah, she thinks it's like a psychological thing, her blindness.
Oh, okay.
So the actual tape footage we hear turns into a dramatized scene with the actors, and the movie intertwines the real archives with the traumatization, or with the dramatization a lot. So I'm traumatized. The whole movie is traumatization.
Dramatization.
Anyways, the real archives and the dramatizations like intermix a lot, so I'm not going to point it out every time. Just know that that's flowing the whole time.
Yeah.
So Dr. Campos tells Abby that he thinks she and her daughter have the same problem, but with different symptoms. And Abby stays firm in the belief that it would help her a lot if she could just remember the face of, quote, that man, so that they could somehow track him down and find some closure.
Okay, interesting.
He seems to be giving in to what she's asking him to do, which is the hypnotherapy. And he starts recording the session with this video camera that he sets up so that she can later review it. And the hypnosis process begins.
Oh boy.
She gets into this deeply relaxed state, listens to the sound of his voice as he starts counting her into the hypnotic state. And I just have to ask you,
okay,
do you believe in hypnosis?
I find that an interesting question because, like, I remember back in college, like, that was a thing that was done at, like, events, like, a little show with someone who, like, hypnotized people. And they always would come out of it being like, I genuinely, like, feel like I was hypnotized.
Mm.
So I feel like there's got to be something to it. There has to be, because I don't think everybody's lying. That says that they've felt that they've been hypnotized. But it's also just like, is it just power of suggestion, like, to an extreme? But, like, you could still call that hypnosis. So, you know, I think it's a complex conversation.
Yeah, like, what if the power of hypnosis is the power of suggestion and it makes you go places you wouldn't otherwise go?
Right.
That makes sense. I've, like, never had – you've never been hypnotized? Like,
No.
Yeah, no, me either. They, like, always had hypnotists at, like, dance – after parties.
Yeah, like, why? I don't know.
Exactly.
So random.
And I was like, I don't want to do that because there's a part of me that is like, what if it is real? I don't want to make a fool of myself.
And exactly.
So yeah, I'm like, I think I'm with you, or I'm like, I could see how that's a thing, but I also am like, it's probably like psychics to me, where some of them are real, exactly, and some of them aren't.
Right.
Once Abby is hypnotized, Dr. Campos encourages her to go back to the night of August 2nd, 2000, just a couple months before now, and he asks her to go back to when she was with Will just before the intruder entered their home.
Mm.
She recalls that her and Will were lying in bed together and they fell asleep for a short time, but then she woke up to Will literally like getting stabbed to death in the chest.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she's freaking out like in distress and screaming in the hypnotic state.
Yeah.
While she's reliving it.
Yeah.
But Dr. Campos pushes her to try and see the intruder's face.
Oof.
But she's too focused on all the blood everywhere and her dead husband, and she's spiraling. So eventually Dr. Campos cuts her out of the hypnosis. She's disappointed that it didn't work and feeling guilty that she can't remember this guy's face.
Right. But
there's just like not much that they can do about it.
Yeah.
Once she calms down a bit, Dr. Campos suggests that she take some time off from work because she's like she does hypnotherapy as well. She's like a therapist and she does that.
Okay.
But Abby's like, no, I'm fine. I'm not going to do that. She's so mean.
So real, girly.
She's determined to finish a sleep disorder study that Will was really passionate about when he was alive.
Mm.
Like saying that he would have wanted her to finish it as soon as possible. So she's kind of become a workaholic around that.
Gotcha.
After the session, Abby flies back home to Nome, as in she has a personal plane that she's the pilot of, and the only way to get to Nome is by plane.
Oh, wow. Okay, fancy.
Yeah, there's a lot of places. I bet Nome is genuinely in real life like that, but that's just so crazy to me.
Right?
Like, I cannot imagine, like, no thank you. I can't even go on a plane ride once a year is too much for me. Like, I'm not.
It's overwhelming.
I'm not taking a plane. Small planes scare me, too. Like, that's where the horrific stuff happens.
Right. I've never been on one, and I don't want to go on one. Thank you very much.
No, thank you. Once she gets back, she goes straight to work to meet with some patients that are taking part in this sleep disorder study that she was talking about. And her first patient's name is Scott. When she asks how he's been sleeping, he says that it's been worse, and he keeps waking up in the middle of the night, unable to fall back asleep, and he says this usually happens around 2:30 to 3 in the morning.
Exactly. Oh, no, not 3 a.m.
We don't fuck with 3 a.m.
No, we don't, for a lot of reasons.
Ugh, and every night, he notices an owl at his window.
Hell no. Not the owl.
No, why? Like, unnecessary. Every night?
Ew.
And we cut to another patient of hers, and it's a woman this time, who's relaying the exact same phenomena. Like, she's experiencing the exact same thing.
Not the owl.
Yes.
The owl?
Yes. Yeah,
see, no, that's not a sleep disorder. That's what we call a haunting. Thank you very much.
Yup. She keeps waking up around 3 in the morning, no reason in particular, sees this white owl specifically, and it's just sitting there and staring at her. We cut to a third patient telling the same story, dealing with the same thing. The owl stares at him for hours. Hours they're up with this owl.
No. Why are you up with an owl?
Go to bed.
Go to bed, bro.
Close your eyes.
Stop it.
Apparently this patient of hers had seen this specific owl before all of this middle of the night stuff started happening.
Oh.
Once when he was a kid.
Oh, it goes back.
Yeah. And now all of her patients are seeing it every night for the past week now.
Yikes.
So one of her patients, Tommy, gets a little freaked out talking about it. And he goes, I think it came inside. And Abby, of course, is like, okay, was your window open?
Right.
But he says no. And yeah. And then they're all saying that they remember the owl somehow being in their bedrooms, like above their beds looking down at them.
Ew, I hate everything about this. That is horrifying.
And then that's where the memory starts to get clouded. So she tells all of her patients to please come back to see her again tomorrow because she's going to try something new to uncover what's going on here. She's planning on starting the hypnotherapy with them.
Okay, what's crazy is she's like, yeah, I got this. Like, owls are showing up in my patients' houses. I got this. This is something I can cover. Like, no, girl. This is beyond your control.
What time are we booking for tomorrow?
Yeah. It's like, that's actually crazy.
So after work, Abby goes to pick her daughter Ashley up from school. Ashley's around 10 years old. She hasn't been doing well since her dad's death, obviously, like grieving.
Understandable.
We hear a voiceover from one of Abby's interviews where she says, I felt so sorry for my baby and feel responsible. Conversion disorder is not a phenomenon that a lot of people understand, and we've had to make quite an adjustment.
Conversion disorder.
So I had to look it up.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
It's a real thing. A conversion disorder is a psychiatric condition that causes physical symptoms without an obvious physical cause.
So are we talking about like when health anxiety can like make you physically feel things that aren't there? Like, would that fall under that, do you think?
I don't know, but I would think so, because it's got to be, it's a psychiatric condition.
Like
so it's
psychosomatic. Because like, yeah. I've been through stuff where they're like, you might be just psychosomatic imagining these things, blah, blah, blah. So like, I've heard about this kind of stuff before.
So the symptoms are real. Like they're born of something from your mind, but they cause like real symptoms, and they can like significantly impact a person's ability to even function whatsoever. I think
interesting. Okay,
it's even down to like bruises. Like people will get,
whoa,
yeah,
hate that.
So that's what they think is happening with what led to Ashley going blind.
Oof. Okay.
So Ashley's waiting on the steps of the school to be picked up, and when she hears her mom do a bird call as she walks up to her to let her know that she's there, she like gets up and is like, oh, hey, like their little signal to each other.
Hate that, honestly. Not, that's kind of creepy.
With the owl lore that we have now, like, no, yeah, thank you.
Can we put the birds down? Like, I'm good.
And Abby tries to ask Ashley how her day at school was, but Ashley doesn't really want to give details, and it honestly is just like, it seems like she's depressed, understandably. She's not very responsive.
And wait, she's how old again?
I'd say around 10.
Okay.
Abby knows that it's not just that. It's not just that she's not having a good day, because no good days are good with everything that's happened.
Mm-hmm.
She can tell that something like must have happened like at school today. So she presses her a bit about it. And Ashley ends up telling her that some kids at school are calling her a faker, saying her blindness isn't real.
Ooh.
Yeah, oh,
and children.
They just are telling her she just wants pity because of what happened to her dad. So,
yikes.
Yeah, kids suck.
Kids do suck, bro. Don't even get me started.
That night, Abby sits down to dinner with her two kids, and we know Ashley. She also has a son who's about 13 years old, and his name is Ronnie. And when Abby is saying their prayers, little Ashley's like holding her hands and bowing her head, but Ronnie could not care less about his prayers.
Mm-hmm.
Abby tries to catch up with Ronnie and ask him what's coming up with his game this weekend and what team they're playing against. And there's like absolutely no mention of what sport we're talking about. But
oh, okay.
Anyways,
let's go sports.
Go sports ball. But he gets annoyed at her for even asking, because apparently he's told her already. Mm. And he's like, Dad would never forget. So
that's me and my brother, actually. He tells me things and I forget them 5 minutes later. So I could relate to this.
I literally have to write stuff down when people tell me things.
Exactly.
Like, okay. But yeah, very like textbook kids. He's struggling to cope with the traumatic experience, the grief. Ashley and Ronnie are kind of struggling in different ways. It turns into a whole fight where the topic of Will's death comes up. And Ronnie is like, have you accepted it yet? Have you accepted how Dad died? And Abby's just asking him to stop because little Ashley is right there and she's just, it's kind of morbid and she's,
yeah,
young.
It's a bit much.
But he just gets more heated and he's annoyed that she spends so much time helping other people, but she won't take the time to work on herself.
Oh, okay.
And he storms off, leaving dinner behind. So like, it's kind of weird. He's like, have you accepted how it happened? And it's like, it kind of makes you wonder if she is an unreliable narrator.
Oh, because yeah. We saw like we heard about that he was like stabbed, yeah, right? So you kind of have to wonder now, maybe that's not what happened.
Yeah,
exactly. Or there's something else to it potentially.
Yeah. After the kids are in bed that night, Abby is in her study, and in one of her books, she looks at a bookmark that was just a folded up piece of paper, and there's a name and a number on it. And the name is Dr. Odusami, a very similar last name to our director, not the same guy.
Oh, okay. Why confuse me like that, man? Yeah.
But she puts that aside and starts listening to a tape. And this tape is from August 1st, 2000. And it's Will. And he's just stating his findings about the sleep disorder cases that he started noticing in his patients.
Okay.
So he goes, even during the night months, they can't sleep. We've seen over 300 people throughout Nome who are all exhibiting the same symptoms. Around 3 in the morning, they are awakened for no apparent reason, and they wake up frightened as if something is about to happen.
Yeah, no thanks. That sounds like my worst nightmare.
Like, also, if you're gonna come for me, like, can I at least be awake? Like, I don't want to be woken up. Like, I'm trying to get my sleep.
I can picture it now. Like, somebody's like breaking into my house at 3 a.m. and I'm just like, where's the snooze button? Like, I don't have time for this right now.
Honestly, like, I have my dog Karma. She will bark if there is something going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's happened before in the middle of the night where, like, she's barking. And usually that's nice because you want to be like, oh, what's going on? Like,
yeah.
guard dog vibes.
Right.
Nah, most of the time I'm just like, ugh, whatever, pillow over my head.
You're like, girl, stop, please.
So the next day at work, Abby is testing out some hypnotherapy on her patients, and we start with Tommy. She counts him down to one, and he kind of slumps over and is staring down into his lap in that hypnotic state, and Abby asks him to recount his night just last night, and he says that he had trouble sleeping again, that the owl was there again.
Of course.
But when he tries to remember details of the owl, he comes up short. He can't remember, and suddenly he's like, wait. There might not have been an owl at all.
Oh.
And then all of a sudden his head lifts up and his eyes snap onto Abby.
Ew.
And he goes, there's something outside my door. It's going to open it.
Oh, no, there's not.
He's shaking in terror and continues, the door is opening.
Ew.
And then he starts hyperventilating, saying, oh my God, no, 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 no. And he stands up and launches himself over the couch, trying to get away from what he's seeing.
Yikes.
Still screaming, knocks over a table and a lamp. And Abby's trying to count him out of the trance, but it's not working. So she has to walk over him. Yeah, it's like he's stuck in that moment. And so she walks over to him, grabs him. She tries to comfort him, just remind him that what he's seeing isn't real. And he's like, it is real. But his breathing does start to calm down. So it's working. Okay. He eventually comes back to his senses and he sees like the smashed lamp and the side table. And he's like, oh my God, did I do that? She's like, yeah, it's fine. But what did you see?
Yeah.
And he says, nothing.
Oh,
and she's like, but you just said that you did.
Yeah.
Like, why aren't you telling me?
No, this is making me so uneasy. Like, I'm really tense right now. I don't like this.
Love. He like keeps repeating it too. He's like, didn't see anything. Nope, not me. I don't see things. It's obvious with how he's saying it that he does remember whatever memory. Yeah, whatever memory was just unlocked, he remembers it and he just doesn't want to admit it for some reason.
Ooh.
So despite all of Abby's urgings to talk about it, that he needs to talk about it if they want to figure out how to help him, he still refuses, saying that he just needs to get out of there and they can just talk about it next time, and he leaves. And then we cut to some actual audio from a 911 call on October 3rd, 2000 at 1:07 a.m.
Oh, goody.
We hear the operator, 911, what is your emergency? There's a woman sobbing on the other end. The woman's like, please help me.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear her pleading with someone else that she's with, saying, put the gun down, please, I love you.
Oh, okay, yikes.
Then we hear two gunshots back to back and a scream. And the woman says, no, please, you don't have to do this. Tommy, the kids. Yeah. So this is like the patient that we just had in. It's his wife, and Tommy's off the rails, like with a gun for some reason.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Obviously, the operator is calling out all available units to the scene of this call. And Sheriff August, he becomes a big player in the movie, the head sheriff. Sheriff August pulls up outside of Tommy's house. He's obviously one of many, but we keep focused on him because he makes a call directly into the house.
Hmm.
We can see Tommy and his wife pacing around inside, like through the windows, and we see Tommy answer the phone. So Sheriff August is like, what the hell is going on?
What's up, bud?
And Tommy just says that he wants to talk to Abby Tyler.
Oh.
Sheriff August says she's not here, but he can talk to him. And Tommy flips out and screams, I have to talk to her. And he starts shooting his gun through the front windows out toward the squad cars.
Oh, geez.
So they call Abby. She wakes up to the call and they tell her that her patient Tommy is holding his family hostage and is asking for her. So,
hey, you might want to get out here, you know.
So when she gets there, they tell her that she needs to get Tommy to start thinking rationally because right now he has Sarah, Timothy, and Joe lined up in the kitchen with a gun to their heads.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yikes. And all he wants to do is talk to her. So when Abby starts to talk to him, she can see through his front window that he has his wife like in a hold. He has like her pulled against his chest.
Right.
And he tells her, I'm so sorry, but I have to do this.
Do what, bro?
She tries to talk him down, but he says that if she saw what he saw every night, that she would understand.
Oh, God.
So obviously she asks him what he saw. And he says, it doesn't matter because we're never going to have to see it again.
See, okay, the place that my mind has gone so far is like, because he was like scared to admit what he saw to Abby, I'm like, did he see himself? Like, did he see this night almost, you know? Ooh. That's where my brain is. Did he see this, like a future version of himself doing something terrible?
I like that theory.
Yeah.
He also asks her, do you know what Zimabu Eater means?
Oh, yeah. I talk about that usually on the daily.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
She doesn't. None of us know what the hell he's talking about. And he starts freaking out, screaming that he needs to know what that means right now. And Abby's saying she just needs more time and she can figure it out. But he tells her that she can't help him. And then he tells his wife that he loves her before shooting her in the head, shooting his two kids in the kitchen, and then turning the gun on himself and ending it all with suicide.
Wait, no. Okay, so I thought he was just gonna off himself. Like, I thought maybe he was doing this to protect his family. But I guess that wouldn't be as big a hubbubbler over here. Okay, so he took out his whole family.
Mm-hmm.
What could you possibly see that would make you want to take out your entire family?
Yeah, that's so scary, too. Like, as an outsider looking in, because this is a totally normal guy until
now. He snaps.
So it's like, honestly, in real life, if I knew somebody and they just turned like this, I think my mind might go paranormal. I think I'd be open to it.
Absolutely. Because like, it's true that you never know what's going on with somebody. But if you knew somebody decently well and this just happened, you'd be like, especially if they're sitting there going, I'm seeing this. I think I would like to think my brain would initially go to something is mentally going on there, but
true.
I don't know, if you know them well and it's not like that's wow.
Yikes. Yeah, because it doesn't seem like he definitely was having trouble sleeping, and like the whole owl thing is weird, and it's like that part very clearly seems like a mental issue is happening. But then it's weird because outside of that, he's doing completely fine. Like there's no snowball effect. It's just like for weeks, boom. I've just had weird sleep, and then it just turns like that. Well, I mean, because then obviously now we know he remembered whatever he was seeing during hypnotherapy, and that was too much.
Right. And like to Abby, like her being a therapist, psychologist, whatever you want to call it, I don't know how her brain isn't 100% stuck on paranormal when she's seen multiple people have the exact same thing. If multiple people that didn't talk to each other told me that, I would have to say it's paranormal.
Yeah. The more I think about it, if it's just one person, I would stick with mental situations a lot more. But I think it's because I know it's a phenomenon with multiple people that I'm like, oh yeah, I'd be open to paranormal pretty quick. Which, yeah, if I had that knowledge, I would.
Right.
So from here, we cut to more actual audio from an interview at the station between Sheriff August and Abby Tyler, and she's filling him in on the sleep disorder study that Tommy has been seeing what he thought was an owl every night, but at their latest session under hypnosis, realized it was something else, and something that scared the hell out of him. Sheriff August is like, do you think he still would have done this if you hadn't hypnotized him?
Ooh.
And I'm that's
heavy question. That is a hard question, bro.
It's rough to face. She doesn't want all of this to get turned on her, so she makes it clear that what happened tonight would have happened eventually, no matter what. And she's trying to tell him that something is happening in this town that she doesn't understand.
Right.
But he's annoyed with all of her, quote, hallucinations bullshit. And he wants real answers. So he's like, he's not into the hypnotherapy stuff.
Okay, sir. Thanks for taking all my time.
Right.
Jeez.
She's like doubting that he'll get to the bottom of this with any, quote, real answers because he still hasn't even been able to find her husband's killer, which she is hung up about.
Yep.
with this guy specifically. Like, she doesn't have the most faith in him because...
Exactly.
But to that, he counters, you know damn well what happened to your husband. That case is closed.
Ooh.
Again, a little seed of like, what happened?
Yeah, what did happen? I'm very invested in that.
She keeps fighting back, saying that he can't just file cases away without knowing what really happened, and there are more unsolved murders and missing people in Nome than any other town in Alaska, 3 years of which have been under his watch, and whatever happening here is very real.
Hmm.
I mean, it's hard to deny, like, with all these stories coming in with all these people.
Exactly.
The sheriff screams at her to stop and sit down, and then basically scolds her that she needs to stop the study that her and Will started together because it's bringing nothing but bad news to their town. So he's just worried about saving face.
Yeah, because, like, it's clearly not causing the issue, or at least I don't think it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It seems to just, like, bring it more to light.
Right.
But, of course, she's not going to stop. That night, in bed, she continues to keep talking into her little tape recorder to keep her thoughts organized, and she's considering whether her other sleep disorder patients will come to the same realization that Tommy had under hypnosis,
yeah.
And maybe one of them will actually tell her, and she can figure out what's going on. So the next day at work, when Abby pulls up, her friend and psychologist that we met toward the start of the movie, Dr. Campos, is...
Yep.
waiting for her, and he just is there and wanting to check in on her after everything that went down the previous night, because he's the one who was like, you should stop working, and then this happens.
Yes.
And she's like,
yeah,
still going.
Absolutely.
She's like, yeah, I'm fine, you really didn't need to fly into town just to check on me. But he's like, I'm here to try to really encourage you to take some time off, like,
yeah,
please. She's not having it. She knows something's up, and it's not a coincidence what happened to her husband and to Tommy and his family and the other patients of hers who are experiencing this weird phenomenon. He's understanding of her urgency, but he asks if it's okay for him to just stick around for a bit just to, like, keep an eye on her and make sure she's doing okay. And she hugs him. So, like, they have a good relationship.
Yeah.
And she appreciates it. Like, she doesn't get too mad, you know, confrontational,
right,
about him being worried about her. Like, she gets it. Her first patient of the day is Scott again. He has his wife, Cindy, with him this time. They're freaked out. And of course, the first topic of discussion is them asking what the hell happened with Tommy.
Mm.
Abby can't divulge too much, but does tell them that she thinks it was linked to his sleeping habits. So obviously,
yikes,
Scott and Cindy are freaked out by that.
Yeah, that would scare me.
Is something going to happen to us? Like, what was that? But they've thought about it, and they decided that they want Scott to undergo hypnosis as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
To see if there's anything that he's suppressing. Abby is down, but asks if her colleague, Dr. Campos, can come in and observe, which they agree to.
Okay.
So they go for it. And
oh, no.
Yep.
Oh, no.
Under hypnosis, he recalls the previous night. He recalls the owl, and he tries to remember exactly what the owl looks like, but he realizes it doesn't look like a normal owl, and the hyperventilation starts. Now suddenly there is no owl, and he's saying, honey, wake up, like, presumably to his wife sleeping beside him in this memory.
Right.
But she won't wake up, and then there's somebody outside the door, the bedroom door.
Oh, not again.
And Abby asks him to describe what he sees, who's outside the door, and Scott says, not who, what. I know what they are. They come all the time. Since I was little.
Since I was little?
Right. A new sense of terror takes over him as he's reliving this previous night, but he just keeps talking to Abby, and he says, they're going to open the door. They get in without setting off the alarm. I thought they only come when I think about them, but I wasn't thinking about them tonight. And then Scott's panic turns into almost like full-on seizing. His throat is gurgling like he's about to throw up or something.
Ew.
So Abby starts to count him out of the hypnosis. Like, we
for
hit,
sure. It's
we hit
time.
That point. And it takes a second for him to come out of that state, but he does. And when he does, he immediately throws up.
Okay.
And once he's calmed down and he's ready to talk, he's pretty forthcoming, and he says, I saw them. So Abby asks,
oh,
who is them?
Yeah, elaborate, bud.
He says, they're not from here. I can't describe it. I can't see what's in my own mind. All I can see is an owl, but I know it's not an owl.
Okay.
But I remember the smell like a putrid cinnamon.
Putrid cinnamon?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, that's such an interesting little detail.
Is that what aliens smell like? Putrid cinnamon?
You heard it here first.
What?
The worst part was the voice inside my head, because they talk to you, so you can hear them, but they also talk inside your mind like you're connected or something. And they take me away somewhere, but I can't remember where. And I can't remember what they do to me.
Oh.
And he starts to break down again crying, so Abby says, that's enough for today.
Yeah, I think that's good.
Yep. And she tells the couple that under the circumstances, she's going to contact Sheriff August to let him know that they've met and had this hypnosis.
Absolutely. I was going to say, like, you're just going home after that? After you know what went down with Tommy? Like, I don't think so.
Absolutely not. And the couple are very, like, encouraging and thankful about that. They, like, find comfort in that, because they're like, okay, if anyone's, like, stationed outside tonight, not a problem. Please do.
It'll help. Yeah.
Scott says, now I know why Tommy did what he did. Which is like,
we're going to lock you in a room for the rest of the night. Like, come on.
If I was his wife, I'd be like, what the fuck do you mean by that?
Yeah.
I honestly don't know.
Because if you understand it, like, what's going to stop you from doing it? Especially if something enters your mind and controls you in some way.
Exactly. I don't know how. She just goes home with him and is like, okay.
Okay, survivability score number one. I'm not going home with that man.
Yes.
Like, I'm not doing that. I'm not stupid.
So obviously, like, Abby is alarmed by this statement. She's like, why? Why do you understand now? And he goes, you'd have to have seen it, felt it, what it is. It's the worst of anything you could ever imagine.
Okay.
Yeah, I think what the movie does well is, like, leave a lot to your imagination.
Yeah, no, it's doing a lot right now, because what are you talking about, sir?
Yeah, because that's the worst. It's the worst. You can work up the worst in your mind 100 times scarier than what you could see on a screen.
Oh, yeah, I like when, like, a monster isn't revealed, because I do think
usually
a big monster, you know, quote-unquote monster, often ends up being a disappointment. So.
Agreed.
Sometimes, you know, leaving things up to your imagination is a better route.
Yep. So Scott and Cindy leave, and they do they do Dr. Campos.
Yeah, they do. Wow, that's crazy. What a crazy plot point.
Big turn in the vibe. So Scott and Cindy leave, and when they do,
Dr. Campos. We love a comma.
Dr. Campos is like, what the hell was that? Because he's just walking in all this for the first time.
Right.
And Abby says to him, do you believe in abduction theories?
Ooh.
And it takes him a second to realize that she's talking about alien abductions.
Yeah.
But she tries to get the possibility across to him, saying that Will kept up with that kind of thing, and that there are over 11 million people that have either reported seeing or know someone who has seen UFOs since the 1930s.
11 million?
I believe it. Do you know anyone who claims to have seen one?
I don't think so. But at the same time, I don't know, because, like, UFO is a broad term, right?
True.
Like a light in the sky.
Yeah.
Like, some people just go, oh, a light, and then they go, UFO. Like, I saw a drone recently. You know, I don't know if you've heard about the whole drone thing.
Oh, yes.
I saw one of those drones recently, and it was, like, right after someone had been telling me all about this, like, drone theory thing going on. And it freaked me out in a UFO sort of way, but I didn't think it was actually a UFO. I was just like, oh, this is one of those creepy drones people have been talking about, which I don't even know what that's about. Don't even get me started on that, because that freaks me out.
Yeah, like, the security-wise, I've seen the story. I've not seen, like, any – that's you freaked out about it in a UFO kind of way. There's not, like, UFO theories about the drones, right?
No, I don't think so. I think it's, like, all government-related theories.
Yeah. I've definitely seen that. I have family members who claim to have been – literally abducted.
No way.
I don't even remember the full story, but, like, I kind of don't remember it, because as soon as I heard them say that they were drunk and high at the time, I was like, oh. You know, not totally credible, but, like, I believe it. Whether I believe all of them are true, absolutely not.
Oh, yeah.
But 11 million, I wouldn't be surprised if 11 million people have at least known someone to have claimed it.
Right. I guess claiming is different than experiencing.
Right. So, right.
Yeah. A lot of people claim a lot of things.
So Dr. Campos tries to keep our girl grounded here, saying that there's a multitude of logical reasons to combat that theory, like yes. weather balloons, atmospheric events, optical illusions, and in this case, perhaps hypnosis-induced hallucinations.
Right.
Then they get interrupted because Abby's assistant, who works the front desk at this place, comes bursting in. Mm-hmm. When Abby got to work that morning, she gave the tape that she recorded last night when she was researching. She gave it to this girl at the front desk to transcribe. And now this girl's all freaked out about it, asking if Abby has listened to this tape.
Oh, God.
She gives it to her and she leaves the room, not wanting to hear it again.
I don't want to hear it either.
You're about to hear the story of it.
Oh, boy.
We press play. Everything seems normal and familiar. Like, dialogue is the same that she was talking into it last night. She's basically saying, like, everything's just getting worse. It's remaining mm-hmm. unsolved. Like, Will, yeah. she doesn't know what to do from here. And then she just trails off, and there's this length of time where there's just no talking and it's just heavy breathing. And it kind of sounds like Ooh. She's fallen asleep while she was recording. And then the scream starts.
Oh.
She's screaming at the top of her lungs.
Yikes.
Like animalistic, raw, terrified Ugh. Screams.
Gross.
And then a full-on demon voice starts talking.
Oh.
And we can't tell what they're saying. It's like super distorted and yeah. likely a completely different language.
Okay, yep.
And then the tape stops.
I don't like demon voices. Demon voices yeah. are one of my big no-nos. I don't like them in horror films because they just make me crazily uncomfortable.
Again, it's like audio stuff makes me uncomfortable way more than visual stuff.
Absolutely. Sound design is more important than your visuals, in my personal opinion.
Agreed. We then cut to another interview between the real, quote, real Dr. Tyler, Abby.
Yes.
And the director. And she's explaining that after hearing that, she was in complete denial, thinking that she couldn't, or thinking that that couldn't have been her on the tape. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. It's giving, I don't know if I can leave this in because it's a whole tangent probably if I explain it, but it's giving me feeling crazy after our key card situation.
Oh
in
my
Boston.
God, right? Yeah.
Long story short, we obtained a third key card to our hotel and we have no idea where it came from. It didn't yeah. even go to either of our rooms, but I was walking around Boston holding this key card and I didn't even know it. And it freaked yeah. me out.
That was truly bizarre.
Times a million, though, this feeling that yeah. she has is very similar where it's like, I don't remember that. That's not me.
Yeah.
She went home and she tried to recount what happened during the recording. And she remembers sleeping in her bed when her door opened.
Oh.
And something came into her room. And now she's backtracking, thinking about it all, because she got this scab on one of her shoulder blades that she noticed the next morning, like after the tape was recorded.
Okay.
So technically, like this morning, she had this random scab on her shoulder blade. And now she's like, is it possible that whatever happened to her, was it caused by some sort of allergic reaction? That's what it looks like. It kind of is okay, looking like yeah. an allergic reaction situation. But like, she's only noticing it now. So that doesn't actually confirm how long it's been there. So she's like, I don't
true,
know.
True, true, true.
She remembers fighting with this thing that came into her room.
No, 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 no.
But it was too strong and it took her away. Now, coming home from hearing the tape, she notices scratches all over her bedroom's hardwood floors leading to the door.
Whoa! Nope. I'm moving out. I'm moving to a new country,
oh,
baby.
This is a perfect what would you do situation.
It is perfect. If I saw scratches on my bedroom floor, I would probably, like, okay, put myself in her shoes right now. If it's me, I might call my parents and be like, can I come stay at your house? Like, there's like these weird scratches. Like, it's just kind of freaking me out. Like, can I come stay with you? I think that's what I would do.
Yeah, realistically, most of my what would you do's would probably be call my mom.
Hey, I'm 27 years old and I need your right. help.
Literally, and go stay by them. No, that's what I totally get you, though. Like, just wanting to get out of that space. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like anything paranormal. I'm very much like, I need to stay somewhere else. Even if I don't have like someone to go to, hopefully, like, obviously, family or friend is the go-to. But right. I would be like, let me get a hotel room. Like, if I have no, I just need to get out.
I think there's like a threshold there when it comes to paranormal, because like if like a door closes on its own in my house, I'm not going anywhere, because I'm going to come up with reasons why that could be. Scratches on my floor, like I can't come up with another reason for that. Like, even it's not like I wasn't moving furniture around. Maybe my brain might think I was sleepwalking and moved it. Maybe I would do that, because I do have a little bit of a history of sleepwalking. Ooh. But at the end of the day, I think I would want to get out of the house.
It's true. If I was just a person experiencing this, that's so true. It's like I would chalk it up to crazy nightmares and like sleepwalking. Like, what did I do last night? That's weird.
Yeah.
But like, again, with her knowledge of this happening to other people.
Right.
100%. I'm going to sleep in my parents' bed.
Yep. Yeah, right? Like, just getting in between you guys. Excuse me. Yeah.
She spends endless hours obsessing over this tape, listening over and over, trying to understand what this language is on it. Mm-hmm. And she's like, this has got to be the key to everything. She returns to that like loose leaf bookmark in one of those books that she was looking at earlier. Yes. And she decides to call the person whose phone number she has written down on it, Dr. Odusami. Who, again, is not the director.
Yeah, yes. Similar name. Different dude.
But he is a language expert.
Oh, okay.
And she asks him if he's familiar with a person named Dr. William Tyler, like her husband.
Yes.
And that's when I connected the dots that it was Will that wrote down this person's contact information. Wasn't clear.
Because it's like, yep. Okay.
All her stuff. So I was like, okay, that's probably your bookmark. But no, that was like left over from him. So she's never talked to this person before and known of this person. She just knows this is like a language contact of her husband's.
Got it.
So anyways, she clams up on the call when he asks for her name and she just like hangs up.
Oh.
I don't know why.
Yeah, that's kind of a weird.
Yeah, I feel like I just give my name.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with your name.
The book that had his contact information in it is one of his own books. Like, he's the author of that book.
Yeah.
And it's a book on language. So she flips through it. And there's some old school alien research in this book, particularly in the ancient languages sections.
Oh.
So her phone starts ringing and she answers. And it's Dr. Odusami again. And he says, listen. There was a man who called me from this number. He called himself John. He wanted to have a history lesson on ancient languages.
Ooh.
So she fills him in about everything.
Yeah.
That was her husband. He's been murdered. And all this insane shit has been happening ever since.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Odusami agrees to fly over to Nome to meet with her in person.
Oh, wow. Okay, sir.
So
thanks.
Yeah. Thank you so much for caring at all, because I swear to God, most people would be like, good luck with that.
Yeah, that sounds fun. I gotta go.
Yeah. So in person, he takes a listen to her tape and recognizes the language as Sumerian, which is apparently the holy grail of dead languages, according to him.
Oh.
So he tries to decipher what is being said on the tape, and he recognizes some of the words here and there, but can't quite make out the entire thing altogether just because it's so distorted.
For sure.
But the words he does pick out are, quote, our creation.
That's always good.
Examine and destroy.
Examine and destroy.
For some reason, the most creepy out of those is our creation.
That's true. Our creation is so, like, it's just one of those creepy horror film terms that, like, anytime you're talking about just, like, species and, like, creepy, weird, paranormal developments, it's not fun.
No. I don't want to be your creation, whoever
are. No. Whoever you are, don't touch me.
Abby's like, well, that sounds aggressive, so that's great. And Dr. Odusami is concerned just by the voice itself, admitting that it doesn't sound human. Dr. Campos is there trying to add reason and logic into all of this.
Bro, I was like, it was the wind.
But we're not here for it. He's obviously wrong. We're aware. We're watching a movie and we're like, okay, Dr. Campos.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Odusami talks about the Sumerian hieroglyphics that he's studied in the past. And he's found drawings of rockets that look like Apollo launching into the sky, etchings and sculptures of men in spacesuits and what look like oxygen masks. And all of the artwork was created in the 4th millennium BC.
Oh, the 4th.
And the origins of an alien god were first told in Sumerian history, which is like Sumerian is a real language.
Okay.
So I'm assuming that all of this that they're pulling from is also actually real.
Legit, yeah.
Yeah. So Dr. Campos is trying to talk Abby out of this line of thinking because what's new? And he low-key has a tone that makes it sound like he's trying to make her feel crazy, being like,
oh,
do you honestly believe you were forcibly removed from your bedroom by members of an alien race? It's like, all right, well, when you put it like that, like, it sounds crazy. I know. Yeah, it sounds but crazy.
Also, there are scratches on my floor and there's a demon on a tape that wasn't there. Like, what do you want me to say?
Mm-hmm. Too many things lining up.
Exactly.
Abby doesn't answer that. Instead, she answers the phone that's been ringing, and on the other end is a panicked Cindy, the wife of her patient Scott, who that hypnosis session. And Cindy's like, hey, it's Scott. Something's wrong, and he wants you to come over.
Oh, no. I mean, we knew this was gonna happen.
Right. If everything else is kind of like circling the same cycle,
yep,
it's like, okay.
Here we go again.
So Dr. Campos and Dr. Odusami go with Abby over to see Scott, and Scott is laying in his bed, shivering under his blankets and internally fighting some demons right now.
Oh.
He's rambling about how awful last night was. Abby tries to tell him to calm down and describe to her what happened, but
yeah.
Then she notices on his arm that he has a scabbed wound, kind of similar to the one that she, the one on her shoulder blade. So Scott agrees that he needs to be put under hypnosis again so that he can remember what happened, because it's driving him crazy,
right?
That what did happen is burrowed inside of his brain and scaring him, and he wants to get it out. They set up the camera to record the session and begin. Abby calms him down and is able to successfully count him down into hypnosis, and she's about to say something to him when he completely shoots upright in bed. His mouth opens wide.
Nope.
And a weird low demon sound just comes out of him.
I'm leaving. Nope. I don't do demons.
I don't care about the research. I don't care about, honestly, anything other than me and my children's safety. We're getting on a plane.
Yeah. What the hell are you talking about? His mouth opened and a demon sound came out. No, it didn't. I'm out. Oh, yeah.
We go full exorcist here, and he starts to rise up into the air.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's happening.
Yep, eyes wide, mouth still making crazy noises, and then an entity starts speaking through him, and it says,
oh, God.
You ready?
No, I'm not ready.
No need, pray. I hear and study.
Oh.
So the demon's basically like, chill out. It's fine.
He's like, don't worry about it. I got it covered. No, you don't.
And then Scott crashes down into a heap on the bed, and we cut to Abby's house with her kids, and she's packing up a suitcase.
Yes, girly.
Yes. Get out. She's telling them they need to get everything that they want to bring with them together because they're all leaving for North Carolina.
Hell yeah.
The kids are confused, and she's scaring them a little, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dr. Campos is calling and saying that he's on his way over, whether she likes it or not. And then Abby's son, Ronnie, looks out the window and sees police cars pulling up, followed soon after with a pounding knock on their door. Abby answers, and Sheriff August is pissed because he just found out that Scott is paralyzed from the neck down.
Oh.
Yeah, like the exorcism literally broke his body.
Oh, geez.
Well, I just call it an exorcism because I don't know what else to call it.
Yeah,
but
yeah. I got you.
Yeah. So he's mad. He's demanding answers, but she's drawing a blank. Like, the only way she knows how to explain it is that something was inside of him and it twisted his body. And of course, Sheriff August is like, okay, do you have proof of this?
Right. You're crazy. I don't believe any of this, blah, blah, blah.
And we should have proof because we recorded that session.
We did.
But unfortunately, all of the tape footage was corrupted and distorted.
Of course it was. Oh my God.
As always.
Exhausting.
Do you know what's weird? Side note about like paranormal stuff and tech is one time I went to a psychic. I recorded the session because I was like, I know I'm not going to remember all of this.
Oh, yeah.
She literally said to me, go for it. But sometimes it doesn't come out right. Like sometimes it doesn't record properly because of all of the energy. And I was like,
ew.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, weirdo.
Girl, long story short, a ghost came and talked to me in this session.
Oh, okay.
And when I played back the footage, it was like not there. Like when I played back the recording, it wasn't there. And now I can't remember if it was like it cut itself short at like 8 seconds and just wouldn't record at all, or if it was just silent. I can't remember what the situation was, but I was like, whoa, that is weird.
You're like, no way she said that, and then it was correct.
Yeah.
Oh, that's freaky. Damn.
I don't mind the trope now because I'm like, listen, I think that's kind of real.
It's actually real.
So Sheriff August is like, Jesus, Abby, I want to believe you and I have empathy for you with everything that you've been through, but you have the right to remain silent.
What?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. What did I do?
Anything you say or do can and will be held against you in the court of law. Because he's like, you, I don't know.
He thinks she's putting the ideas in their heads or like, well, but this is he was paralyzed. Did she walk in there and paralyze him?
Exactly. I'm surprised you can arrest someone over something like this, even though it's like she should be a suspect, I guess, because she keeps being involved. But it's right. Like, what do you mean you're going to just take me in?
Arrest me because a man is paralyzed.
Yeah.
Excuse me?
And Dr. Campos shows up and is defending Abby, which is nice. Like, he's like Mr. Logical.
Because he was there, right?
But
so
yes.
So he saw all this. He knows. Okay.
Exactly. He's like there defending her and says he was there in that room and he saw what happened to Scott and what happened was real. And he says he shouldn't be taking Abby away from her kids over something that isn't her fault. So mm-hmm. like, he's kind of annoying throughout because he's like the skeptic of the movie.
Yeah, right.
You easily get annoyed with them. But, you know, nice that he stood up for her here.
Yeah, I'll take it. I'll take it.
So eventually Sheriff August comes up with a compromise, telling Abby that she will be under 24-hour supervision and will not leave her house.
Okay. All right. I mean, I get the supervision at least because, like you said, she's been involved. So, like, she has to be some kind of suspect.
Yes.
I get that.
I get it. It's a fine compromise.
Yeah, I'm all right with that.
The sun is setting, we're hitting dusk now, and we have a sheriff named Ryan stationed outside of Abby's home for the night to keep an eye on everything. Before the night gets started, we go back to another segment of the interview with the real Abby Tyler and the director.
Yes. Okay.
And she's explaining that from there, Sheriff August did some interviewing with Dr. Campos and Dr. Odusami and any Dane County residents who experienced anything to do with this.
Okay.
And with the interview process and digging through previous interviews that have like gone on apparently over decades in this town, they mm-hmm. came to realize that this phenomenon in the town dated back to the 60s.
You know, they're digging back. They're finding paths. Okay.
Yeah. Which is like, wow, took you long enough. Like, this
For
is
real. Like, how did you not put this stuff together before?
Yeah. And the director of Sansanmi asks what her explanation for all of this is. And she says they have different categories for these types of things. An encounter of the first kind, that's when you see a UFO. The second kind is when you see evidence of it, crop circles, radiation. The third kind is when you make contact. But the fourth kind, there's nothing more frightening than the fourth. That one is when they abduct you. And that's what's connected to Will and all of the missing people in Nome. It's happening to people all over the world, and most people don't even know it.
Ew! Don't say that to me.
So now you get it, like, why I was so terrified. It's not even, like with Paranormal Activity, it's like, oh my god, scary ghosts. Because I swear, I thought that that was real for a second, too.
I definitely did.
But I, like, never was, like, experiencing that, so I was like, I'm fine, and eventually you just forget about it.
Yeah.
But with something like this, it's like, I could be experiencing it, and I have no idea.
Yeah, no, and, like, I know this isn't a real movie, but now I'm like, shit, like, have I been abducted by an alien? That's wild.
For real, because, like, if aliens exist, which both of us are like, they gotta. We don't know how they exist or what they're like or what the situation is. But, like, I'm guessing they're super advanced.
They're pretty high tech.
And I bet they'd be capable of something like this, and it's freaky.
Damn. Oh my god, now I'm going to be thinking about that when I go to sleep tonight. Thank you, fourth kind.
Mission accomplished. Uh-huh. I'm spreading my trauma.
Thank you for that, Cassie.
So the director's like, what? Like, most people don't know that they're abducted? And she's like, well, how could they know? How could they remember what they're being forced to forget? That's what really drove it home for me.
Right.
So then we're back to the night with Abby and her kids in the house and Ryan, the sheriff, stationed outside.
Right. Okay, yeah.
And it's 3:33 a.m.
No, it is not.
Of course it is.
It's not 3:30. That's the worst.
Ryan had fallen asleep in the car, but he suddenly awakens.
He's doing his job well.
He sees these weird blinking lights in the sky, and they're very blurry, like a mixture of red and yellow and green. Super blurry. We switch to like the real dash cam footage as Ryan gets out of the car and walks in front of the car trying to get a better look at the sky.
Okay.
And then suddenly a giant shadow of a UFO basically comes into frame, completely concealing the sky at like the angle that the camera's pointed at the house. Yeah. And as soon as that happens, the dash cam footage starts distorting heavily and we can't really see what's going on. But we have a grasp on some of the audio. So we hear Ryan go, there's something, oh my God, there's something flying, sir, over the Tyler residence. It's pulling them out of the house. It's taking them. You better get somebody down here now.
Yeah, get somebody down here to stop the UFO.
Yeah, let's shoot at this thing, I guess.
Let's shoot at it, maybe. I don't know. Do we have a UFO gun? I don't know how this works.
Apparently we need one, honestly. Yeah. What just went down spanned probably about 30 seconds. So it's still 3:33 a.m.
Oh, good.
And then the dash cam footage comes back into focus. The UFO's gone, and Sheriff Ryan is just freaking out in front of this house.
Mood.
Real. Police backup shows up, and Sheriff August is not happy to hear the crazy story that Ryan is giving him.
He's pissed that he's getting proven wrong, and it's amazing.
Yes. And then on top of that, saying that the footage is corrupted, of course, so he can't even show what happened. Sheriff August gets inside the house to look around, and he finds Abby and her son Ronnie inside.
Okay.
And Abby is hysterically sobbing with like this little lion stuffed animal held to her chest.
Oh.
And Ronnie is trying to console her. And when she sees Sheriff August, she cries out, "They took my baby."
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. She's totally falling apart, kind of hard to understand. So Ronnie explains to Sheriff August that someone kidnapped Ashley. He orders his team to start searching the house top to bottom, then asks Ronnie what he saw, and Ronnie's like, "Nothing. I came in here and she was gone." Which like is real. Like, he wasn't in the room with Ashley when it happened.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that Abby was, so that's why she saw the abduction.
Okay, so she experienced it actually.
Yeah. But Abby is like, "Okay, listen to me. A beam of light came down. They took her into the sky. I saw it." And obviously Sheriff August is like, "What? Like through the ceiling? They took her through the ceiling?"
Yeah, no, that was my first thought. I'm not going to lie. I was like, wait a second.
Right? And she says yes. And he just thinks that she has to be crazy at this point. He's thought she was crazy this whole time. And this is like the nail in the coffin.
I mean, the beam of light is like too on the nose too, though. Right.
It's such a stereotype.
Yeah.
He orders any of his remaining backup out of the room and closes the door and has Abby and Ronnie take a seat. And he gets really firm with her. He thinks she's making up the story and that she knows what happened to Ashley, because it's too much of a coincidence that 5 hours after she's been arrested, her child goes missing. Right. So she's obviously sticking with what she saw and trying to get through to him. But then even Ronnie is like begging his mom to stop. He thinks she's gone insane too.
Yeah.
Sheriff August just point blank tells Abby that she hasn't been right in the head since Will's death, and that he's going to take Ronnie out of her custody now.
No.
Yeah.
So, unless he's right and she is just crazy and there are no aliens, because...
Oh my God.
Right? Who knows?
You could... What did they say at the beginning? Like, what you believe is yours to decide.
That's true. They did put that out there.
She obviously freaks out at this news.
Yeah.
And grabs Ronnie to try to stop them from taking him away. But even Ronnie is like trying to pull out of her grip and like telling her to let go. I know, that sucks. Like,
that's devastating.
Eventually they're able to get him away from her and get him outside into one of the police cars. And back to another interview with Abby and the director, she explains that this was when she realized nobody was going to help her find Ashley, and she had to find a way to go directly to the source herself. Yeah. So she calls Dr. Campos and Dr. Odesami, asking them to come over. And when they're all together, she asks Dr. Campos to hypnotize her. They comply. So it's go time.
Mm-hmm.
She gets counted down and then asked to recount what she was doing three nights earlier. She was working on researching all of these cases, but coming up empty-handed. And that night when she fell asleep, she remembers waking up to an owl, not only looking down at her, but smiling at her.
Owls don't smile?
That's what I'm saying.
No,
what do
they
mean?
Don't do that. They don't do that.
If I saw an owl smile at me...
This episode has given me chills so many times because, like, just the thought of that is disgusting.
Disgusting. They ask her to delve deeper and remember what she really saw, and she admits that there was no owl. And we see the clock strike 3:33 in her memory, and the door of her bedroom creaks open.
Oh, no.
They keep the aliens, like, we don't really see them properly. They keep them kind of shadowed, which I enjoy.
I'm just not mad about that at all.
So multiple shadow figures float inside her room and, like, consume her. The editing is wild. It's like they overtake her.
Okay.
And it's, like, chaotic and blurry when things start being done to her by them. But the sound design is very much conveying that they're basically torturing her. And we see flashes of, like, horrific looking medical devices.
Oh, God.
And she's surrounded by very bright lights while she's being prodded at. And one of the devices digs itself into her shoulder, which, that calls to the chemical burn that she noticed on herself that next day. It would have been. And then this device is, like, metal and it spins like it's a drill, but the end has a peak that is, like, sharp like a knife.
Oh.
And we get this POV shot of that device then going in between her legs.
No, thank you. What? No, okay. I'm upset.
At this point of the memory, hypnotized Abby starts contorting and convulsing just from the memory of the pain. Ugh. And she lets out a demonic scream. And then she starts speaking in Sumerian. So this entity is speaking through her now. And she says, "I enforce my will. Not world no. No as in K-N-O-W.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Not world no. So, like, they don't want the world to know what they do. So, like, they're mad at her for bringing it to light.
Right, okay.
And Abby starts talking back in her own voice to this voice, demanding them to give her baby back to her. And they say, "Child never return. Mine."
Ew! Okay, no. No, give it back.
Mine, I am savior, am father, I am God.
Okay, you know what? Get off your high horse, buddy.
That is another moment that terrified me. I was like, oh my God, God is an alien and he tortures me every night.
God is an alien that tortures me and steals my children. That's like, cute.
How are we all just going to continue living in this world? Everyone needs to see this movie.
Like, you guys don't know what's going on. Like, you haven't seen the film yet. We're screwed.
And then Abby slumps over and her mouth is, like, still wide, like, to the point where it looks like her jaw might have become unhinged. Like, that wide. But she seems to have passed out. And the video footage clears up enough for us to see that. But then it corrupts again. And we hear, like, the entity speak again, and it says, "Zimabu eat her."
Oh, that's from earlier. I remember that.
Tommy, right? Tommy was like, "What is this? What does it mean?
What does it mean?"
And then that is where the footage ends. And in the debrief with the director again, Abby explains that they came and abducted all three of them that night. Her, Campos, and Otusami.
Oh.
Yes. While the hypnotherapy was happening. Yeah. And so I'm wondering if, like, that phrase, "Zimabu eat her," is, like, something, like, a signal for them to abduct.
Yeah, right.
So all three of them were apparently abducted. They were then brought back that same night, like, dropped back in that room.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And that they don't remember where they took them, what they did to them, and even under hypnosis, it's just complete darkness.
Ooh.
Like, there's not even an owl anymore.
Give me the owl back.
Right? I'll take the owl.
I'll take the owl. After what I just heard, I'll take the owl.
The director brings up the fact that it called itself God and asks Abby what she believes. And she basically says that the presence she felt inside her caused complete hopelessness, so it can't be God. But that the power it is capable of makes it able to pretend to be very easily, which is scary.
Yeah.
But 12-year-old me was comforted by that statement. I was like, okay.
You're like, oh, thank God.
He then asks her about Ashley, and she says she was in the hospital for a couple days before waking up after that night, and Dr. Campos and Sheriff August were there when she woke up. And Sheriff August is like, look, I hate to do this with the condition you're in and everything, but I have to ask again, how did Will die?
Yes, wait, I forgot about this whole being a whole plot point.
Mm-hmm. And she says, you know, he was murdered. And Campos tells her that Sheriff August is going to show her something that may upset her, but it has to be done.
Oh, no. I'm scared.
He shows her autopsy photos of Will that clearly show that he had a bullet hole through the side of his head that matched the gun that he owned.
Oh, wait a second.
Mm-hmm. Explaining that it was a suicide and there was no intruder. There was no knife.
No stabbing.
He shot himself at their bedside in the middle of the night. And
why does she remember it so wrong?
She is like close to tears just saying that he wouldn't do that to himself or his family. And she's a psychologist, so she would have known. She would have seen the signs if mm-hmm. he was suicidal. And it seems like she's kind of starting to accept that, but still doesn't want to admit the truth out loud. Like,
okay.
It's basically the vibe is that she has curated this whole story in her mind to cope with the fact that he killed himself. Like,
right.
She cannot face that. So she is like making up the fact that he was murdered to better cope with the man she thought she knew, which is so sad because it's like, it's still him. It's still him. It's just like these things happen and it's devastating.
Right. And that goes back to like the thing the kid said earlier too. Like, have you accepted it? And
yes. Like even her 13-year-old son was like, yeah,
aware
dad killed
of it.
Himself. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then Sheriff August asks her what happened to Ashley. Like, he thinks she's making up stories on both ends.
Yep. Okay. I mean, I kind of am getting him a little bit more now, though, if she's been telling this other story
that
doesn't
he
make
knows
sense.
That he has facts that is incorrect.
Right.
Yeah. It makes you understand him a lot more, like why he's so fixed on like her making stuff up.
Yep.
So yeah, he asks about Ashley and she looks to Campos for help on this one, saying like he experienced this too. Like, this is not made up. They were all abducted together, but Ashley didn't get to come back like they did. And by the look on Campos's face, it seems like he knows this is the truth, but he can't admit this truth out loud. Like, he doesn't want to face this truth.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So he's like trying to convince himself that it didn't happen, but she sticks with the belief that these beings took her daughter. So Sheriff August just tells her that she needs to switch back over from fiction to reality. He's not going to buy it.
Oof.
So in the interview with the director, Abby admits that Will did commit suicide.
Okay.
And that she did not hallucinate his murder, but she just wasn't willing to face the truth for a very mm-hmm. long time. And as far as her credibility in believing her story of what happened to Ashley, she points to the heaps of evidence in the footage with all of the patients experiencing the same phenomenon. Ashley is still missing to this day, and Abby explains that we, the audience, can sit there and speculate, but she has to keep hope alive to believe that Ashley's still alive and that one day she'll get her back. So she's just still out here trying to get her back. And the crew decides to stop that interview there because she's broken down into tears and it doesn't seem mm-hmm. like there's really much else for her to say from here.
Right.
And when they pan out of the interview shot, we see that Abby is now handicapped in a wheelchair, suggesting that she's been completely paralyzed from the waist down, just like Scott was.
Yeah.
After being hypnotized. And the movie ends with some like talking heads from the director and our main actress explaining some facts about Nome, how it's been visited by the FBI over 2,000 times since the 1960s. And second is Anchorage, with a population 76 times larger than Nome. And in the end, what you believe is yours to decide.
Yeah.
And we get some facts on the screen, like how so many documentaries end with like, where are they now? And it says Dr. Campos didn't want any involvement in the film, but that Dr. Odusami helped with translations and corroborated Abby's story.
Mm.
And her son Ronnie is still estranged from her to this day and continues to blame her for Ashley's disappearance.
Wow, okay.
And Abby was cleared of all charges surrounding the case due to the lack of evidence and has relocated to the East Coast. And then during the credits, this fucked me up too.
Oh God, what?
During the credits, we just hear a ton of 911 calls from people all across America reporting UFO sightings and like reporting the same thing that happened to these people in the movie.
Yeah, scary.
Like, oh my God. Me and my cousin watched this movie together and we watched every single 911 call because it would say the location that it came from. And I was like, oh my God, what if one is from Wisconsin? And there wasn't. I was like, oh, okay, yes, we might good. Be safe.
We're chilling in Wisconsin.
And then I remember we were so scarred. Like, we went to the bathroom together that night, like down the hallway to the bathroom. I was like, I can't be alone in the bathroom.
Uh-huh.
This same night, that day, we had gotten this video or this video. That's so like old school of me, but this video from Family Video. And we also had gotten Twilight New Moon. After this, we watched on Twilight New Moon, they had like Team Jacob edit and Team Edward edit, where they would like completely edit out the other man. And you could just watch the movie and
what?
Just...
Yeah. That's wild.
And we were Team Jacob because Taylor Lautner.
Yeah.
And after this, we just watched the Team Jacob edit of Twilight New Moon to help us feel better. And, you know, it kind of helped. I can't lie.
I think it would. I don't blame you for that.
I wrote down my survivability score for this movie, and I'm looking at it right now, and I fear I need you to go first.
Yeah, this is an interesting one because it kind of comes down to what you believe. And after the ending of the movie, I believe her less than I did at the start, which might be crazy. But I feel like I just like my conspiracy theorist side is coming out right now
mm-hmm.
because I'm like, it's way more interesting to think of it as like nothing was actually happening, even Ooh. Though like, again, we have the footage and stuff because it's like, well, but then it just kind of becomes true crime in a way, which is weird.
Yeah.
But because I want to say like my survivability, I want to give it like a straight up like 90.
I did 89.
No way. No freaking way. Like I don't know. I just feel like there's no way I'm going out on this one because I'm not making these poor decisions. And like, I don't know. Maybe we're a delusional bunch over here.
We could be.
But like, I don't know. I'm trying to even think of the decisions that got you there because do you even have any control is the problem.
First of all, I don't live in Nome, Alaska, so I'm
true
safe
that,
there.
True that.
And I'm not moving there anytime soon. We don't even know, first of all. Let's say we do get abducted. Do you die? Like,
right. I don't think so.
Or are you just hanging out with the aliens now? If we consider that like the unsurvivable moment being abducted, there's like not really anything you can do about it. Like it's
yeah.
either it's like it's a 0 or a 100 for this one.
Exactly. And I feel like that's the thing because then you're looking at like the people who died because of what they saw.
Yeah.
That I feel like you have no control over. Because it seems like you get so like in your head about it. But so because like if they come into your room and they start poking you, it sounds like you're good. It's only if they abduct you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And is Ashley the only one that was abducted in the film? Like actually abducted?
Yes. But they did allude to the fact that there's like a million missing persons cases that date back. So but like in the movie, yeah, she's the only one. And I'm like, why her?
Yeah, that is weird.
It's weird. There just seems to be no rhyme or reason. It's like either the aliens decide to screw with you or they don't, and it's just like,
right.
Good
so
luck.
Like, exactly. So I feel like this one is so much more up to chance than any
yes.
of our other ones. It's less based on your decisions. And like, so I feel like we're naive as all hell because we're like, yeah, we're fine. Like, we're chilling. They're not going to touch us.
It's very That's... much like the it won't happen to me mentality.
Exactly. That yeah. is exactly where I think we're coming from. Because, yeah, I'm sad at 90%.
Yeah, which that's our combined. Because if you take that average, obviously 89.5, and yeah. we round up, so
90%. And I'm not mad about it, even though
no.
I do think this is, like, it's a funky one of
yeah.
a lot of random chance in there.
It's interesting. It's, like, honestly, if this movie didn't have the effect that it did on me, and if it wasn't called The Fourth Kind and I wanted to do it for episode 4,
yeah.
I don't know if I would have chosen this type of movie for this type of podcast.
Yeah.
But it's interesting either way because it's cool to go on both ends. Like, I want to find
absolutely.
One where we're literally – I wonder if we'll ever hit, like, a 0% where we agree on a 0%.
I hope we find one.
also curious if this is our 90%, I'm curious about what a 100% would look like. It's very interesting.
Right. Like I'm curious to see if we find 100s and zeros in here.
Yeah.
I do have a question for you though.
Yeah.
Because obviously I didn't watch the film. You have watched the film. Mm-hmm. So for you, you believe this was truly aliens?
Yes.
Okay. So I feel like if I watched it, then I would probably feel the same way. But like just hearing it, my brain is like, maybe she is just a little crazy. So she's like unreliable narrator a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I find that interesting. But I'm curious to go actually watch the film now.
Mm-hmm. I think actually her unreliable subplot or side plot with the whole husband situation.
Yeah.
For some reason, the acknowledgement of that made it more credible for me.
Okay.
I was like, okay, she knows, like she's aware that
that's true.
She can separate real from fiction in that way in her mind where she's like, okay, well, that was not real. That was me coping. But this was real. And I was like, okay, So since you can acknowledge that, maybe this is like real. Ugh, so
it is. Yeah. Okay. No, that's interesting. I'll have to watch it now and reevaluate.
Yeah.
Because I find that really interesting.
It's an interesting – I think it was – like edited really well to look like a true documentary. Like they hit all their bases to make you this feel as real as possible.
Right. And I always say I'm a found footage girly, but I also feel like mockumentary style stuff kind of falls into a similar place. Like I don't know if you've seen Lake Mungo, but it's like the same kind of thing. And I love that just because it's like a true crime doc. And
yeah, I don't know why when you get into like the pseudo documentary found footage genre, I think I really enjoy it too. And I think the reason is because obviously it feels real. So because it feels so real the way that it's set up, the most mundane thing could happen and you'd be like, holy shit, that's terrifying.
Yes. That's like Paranormal Activity, the way that's done.
Yes.
And it's like a door closes and you're like, no way. But it's way scarier in Paranormal Activity than it is in like a, you know, cinematic film.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, this is just their camcorder.
Yep. Well, we survived today, you guys.
We did. Proud of us.
I want to shout out our Discord again because
heck yeah.
You should just hang out just because, but also because we want to hear your survivability scores and you have all week now to submit those. So go ahead and do that. And that's another movie done. Next time it's Caitlin.
Heck yeah, baby.
So we'll leave it there and let us know, would you survive?